Well, it's been almost 3 years since Tanya Nepinak had gone missing. And, of course, there's been a lot of focus these days on the murdered and missing Indigenous women's saga since the discovery of the remains of the young Tina Fontaine last month. I'm joined right now by the auntie of Tanya Nepinak. Her name is Sue Caribou. Sue, if I could just get you to speak a little closer to the microphone. Okay. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Tense times for the family, I suppose?
Yeah, I have high anxiety, y'all. I went to a press conference last night at the Friendship Center.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
What was the subject of the conference?
It's how the police and the community can, how they can work, come together and work together and get along, and suggestions that you make to the police, like do more investigations, inquiry on a missing and murdered Indigenous women and men.
You weren't speaking at that conference.
No, I was just there. I didn't get a chance to ask a question. They only had maybe 7 that were able to ask questions. Like, people had, a lot of people had their hands up, but they couldn't get to everyone. So
now there's you've been through a lot over the last 3 years, it goes without saying. And it's really hit the family pretty hard, I understand. I mean, how has your family coped?
Right now, we've been going through a lot of losses while we're trying to search for my niece, Tanya Nepinak.
Yeah, you still have hope that she's alive? Or
I do, mm-hmm. because without the body, I believe she's still around. Like, there's a lot of human trafficking out there. And till I see her body, I can't say she's, you know, gone.
What about other family members? I think that Tanya's father had been very sick.
We've lost our youngest brother. He was a Native artist on March 20th, and then March 22. My brother-in-law, Bert Nepinak, passed. Like, we've lost a lot of family members since September.
Oh. This month, you mean?
No.
Last month. Last year.
From last year to right now.
Over the past year.
Over the past year. Even when Tanya went missing, we've lost maybe 9 family members.
Yeah, that's tough to lose so many. And, of course, Tanya, we don't even know if she's dead or alive. And
yeah.
Well, what, I mean, we hear from family members, I mean, if they just knew one way or the other, but this business of not knowing, it's a really crushing weight, isn't it?
It is. It's heavy on the heart. I have high anxiety. I keep thinking, well, what's the next step to try and find my niece? And I try and get the search to continue for her, but I get no answers. And I'm at least, maybe we can even do a dragging on the Red River and maybe search the Brady landfill again. But, you know, high hopes. I have high hopes, and I'm not getting any answers from the law enforcement, police enforcement. And I've been doing this on my own. So with the family, with my family's help, we're not giving up, and we can't. I don't think any family member can give up on their loved one, especially when there's no evidence of a body. Mm-hmm. There's no closure.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and I need that closure. Mm-hmm. And our family needs that closure.
Yeah. So. You just touched on that issue of like what the police and law enforcement officials are doing. Like, how would you assess the amount of support your family has been getting, whether it's from government or police, the wider community? Do you feel you have that support? No?
No, I don't. Police don't come and update us on anything, or they don't contact the family and telling us if they're still investigating. Police always say the investigation is still open, but I say they call it cold case files, and I'm not happy with that, cold case file.
Yeah, it's a very crude wording, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, like, Tanya's more than a cold case.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think anybody is a cold case file. And they say the investigations are ongoing, but why aren't they talking to the family, or why aren't they giving information to the family, or even a phone call once in a while to let us know if they're any small evidence or anything.
I see. So that certainly would have been a good advice for the police, and they're having this conference. Would have been good to put that to them, right?
Yeah, exactly. With the conference last night, I wasn't impressed at all. They only had maybe 7 people that they could answer questions. People were asking questions, but they only got maybe to 7 people, and then that was it.
Mm.
So,
Sue Caribou, I'm wondering if you could maybe let our listeners know there's an event coming up this Saturday on the 3rd anniversary of since Tanya went missing. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, I'm having a vigil for my niece at the monument at Forks, September 13, 6 p.m. And I'm hoping that a lot of people come out to support the family. I've messaged the Grand Chief Derek Nipinak, and when I did get a hold of him, he said he asked me the time, the place, and then he said, okay, I'm going to go hunting for my niece's my cousin's vigil. And when he got back, he said he got an elk. So that's heartwarming. It touched my heart that Derek, the Grand Chief, would, you know, when I invited him, he responded to me with, his response to me was, okay, I'm going to go hunt for an elk for the vigil. Mm-hmm. And he had success on the hunting, so we're going to have an elk at the feast.
Okay. And yes, if you just joined us, it's 8:41, and the temperature currently in Winnipeg is 6 degrees Celsius. 7 degrees Celsius. And our guest right now is Sue Caribou. She is the auntie of Tanya Nipinak. We will be joined shortly by Kona Cochran, who has also been very engaged on this issue. I wanted to just to quickly play for you a bit of a piece, a recording I did at the youth camp that's taking place at the Ledge. There's some voices there who are very also been pushing for this issue. So we'll hear a little bit about what they had to say. I just recorded these people just yesterday, so maybe we can just have a listen.
Ah! I'm Tyler Frederick, and I try and specialize in business. And we have been here since day one of the women's camp. I was supposed to be here for just one day at the women's camp, and I've been here since, and even we started our own, and we're going to go for a march. So I'm very passionate about this. During the women's camp, we actually had a lot of people come by and share their stories, and that just made most of us realize that this is a bigger issue than we thought we were addressing. So we felt the need to just keep pushing for the national inquiry until we get our answers.
My name is Sky McLean. I'm 17. Reason why I'm here is after Tina Fontaine's body got pulled from the river, the first person I automatically thought of was this girl who goes to my high school named Niguin. Her name is Feather in Ojibwe, and she really is a feather, and she walks home by herself when I'm not with her, right? And I just right away I thought that could have been Niguin, that could have been my mom, that could have been me, that could have been anybody loves. And ever since then I've been working on this page and this protest at the Forks, and tomorrow I will be starting my hunger strike.
This is why the youth protest was started, because when the Grand Chief from Southern Chief Council came in, he didn't address our youth, so we felt that we were not listened to. So that's what this is here for, is so people could express their voice on these certain issues.
Now, what would you say to some people who might say that a national inquiry might just be an excuse for not taking action, that a national inquiry is just a distraction? What would you say to that?
In the long run, I feel a national inquiry was just speed up the process on making everybody realize that there is a serious problem going on, and it's not just a small little community, but it's actually reaching out now, and it's going across Canada. There's been missing and murdered women across Canada for years now. The adults have felt that they won due to getting Stephen Harper at a round table, but he never promised to go to the round table. He promised to think about going to the round table. And just like Harper's promises, they've been broken for far too long, and we're tired of this. We want action, and we demand action.
By action, I mean, what is this youth camp actually petitioning for specifically?
One of our main causes is going to CFS. With CFS, a lot of teens like to run away in the CFS system, so that leads them to leave their home, be by themselves, which causes them to be vulnerable in the streets, not all, but some, and down the drug addiction road. Some fall under the human trafficking due to their drug abuse.
You connect that directly with murdered and missing Indigenous women?
Yes, because most of them were actually in CFS care, and now they've gone missing, or even worse, murdered.
My name's Kylo Prince. First and foremost, my duty is to ceremony.
I guess the sense that the youth camp is still here, it might suggest to some people that they don't necessarily agree with the elders who packed up early.
It's not about that disagreement. It's about the women have children, and they have work, they have school, and truthfully, they wanted the men to be able to get back to their lives as well, with work and school and just the daily grind. They wanted the men to be able to walk away with their heads held high too. There's always going to be struggles and growing pains and differences in opinion, but like I said, when we keep it spiritual, when we take it to the fire, then we can have respect for each other's opinions. The youth have stood up, and I see their lights shining. And you know, there's some of these guys that I haven't seen before, but as they came into camp with their shoulders down, their head down, now I see them standing up. You know, I see their shoulders. I see the way they stand a little bit different. And it's amazing. It's beautiful. And I love it. The lighting of our spirits, that is a victory. And that is something that Harper, whether he says yes or no, or maybe so, it doesn't make a difference, because there's something that he can't take away from these You know, he can't take away our spiritual awakening. He can throw us in jail or kill us, but our spirits are eternal. And that's something that he, not even with his imagined power, can he take away.
We have a Facebook page. It is United Youth Protests, and we also go by the hashtag Youth for a Voice. We are going to be going doing the hashtag Am I Next?
Okay, so that was just a bit of a piece I put together with voices from the youth camp taking place right now at Memorial Park until September 19th, or so is the plan. Many thanks to Kylo, to Tyler, and to Sky for their contributions. Well, we're joined right now. Sue Caribou is still with us, Tanya Nipanak's auntie, and we're also joined by community activist, mother, and all-around great person, Kona Cochran. So thank you both for coming in.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Anytime I can help people, I'll be there. And Sue in particular, you're a wonderful person.
Thank you. You are awesome.
Now, I know that as of August 19th, I guess that's when the last month when Tina Fontaine's remains were found in a bag in just out of the river by the Alexander docks. The sense I have is that that certainly energized the public awareness of this issue, but I mean, for people who are really attached to this, it's always on the radar screen, right?
Oh, absolutely. Like this, we live this daily. I live in the North End, and I see my people everywhere. And there's a lot of fear. Like, women have a great deal of fear of never knowing whether they're safe.
Mm-hmm. And do you see this the whole issue? I mean, murdered, missing Indigenous women. It's connected to wider currents in the society. I mean, we just had someone talk about from the camp talking about CFS and seeing that as part of the problem of the ways that child welfare system is commonly work. Is that something you...
Absolutely. You know, there's a huge, huge thing that the Canadian public don't recognize, and this is a legacy of the residential schools as well, too. You know, there's a huge amount of just growth that's happening in the last 20 years of people learning to speak up for themselves. You know, up until 1960, it was illegal for our people to gather together. It was illegal, we weren't even allowed to vote. We weren't allowed all kinds of freedoms that Canadians take for granted. They don't realize how marginalized we were not even 50 years ago. And so for us to finally be standing up on our own and speaking, that's huge. And so all these issues have been around for decades. And for an arbitrary number of 1980, since 1980, we're missing almost 1,200 women, murdered and missing Indigenous women. There's only 600,000 Aboriginal women in Canada. You know, if you did a per capita number compared to the number of Canadian non-Aboriginal people, that would be over 27,000 missing non-Aboriginal people in Canada in that period. You know, so people don't realize this is massive. This isn't just a small, that's a small number. Well, yeah, compared to the, millions of Canadians, but we only have 600,000 Indigenous women in Canada. We're missing 1,200 in an arbitrary time period of 1980 to now.
Yeah.
2012 for that matter.
Yeah.
How many more have missing and murdered since?
Yeah. Even in absolute terms, 1,200 is an astonishingly high number.
Absolutely. And we're going to be demonstrating that on the opening of the Human Rights Museum. Grandmother May Louise Campbell and their group are going to be asking, so this is for the public to come and gather again. There was over 2,000 people to honor Tina being found at the Alexander Docks. Well, we need 1,100 people to come to the museum's opening. I wasn't planning on going, but I'm going this time because I'm going to take a sheet with me and I'm going to lie down with my women and we're going to show people what 1,100 dead people look like. We're going to lie there and show them because that's what the call out right now is, for 1,100 people to come down and show people, and in the Scotia stage or wherever it has to going to take place, and you'll see the number that's missing and murdered here in Canada.
So who should we be targeting with these messages? The government, the police, each other, the Human Rights Museum?
Well, that's just it. It's an awareness that's happening. And then the big piece after this is that the call for inquiry, what hopefully that would lead to is maybe more resources, more dollars coming in. But the reality is there's lots of reports that have already proven that this is a need. And yet what's the government been doing over and over again is cutting back. Mm-hmm. All of our capacity is constantly being diminished. You know, we're pretty powerful people when you consider we're still here and we're constantly being pushed down, constantly being battling for simple rights that most Canadians take for granted, but also for the resources. You know, this is our homeland. The sharing of all those resources have not happened. You know, people complain about their tax dollars going someplace. Well, you know, that's not your tax dollars. There's all the resources of Canada belong to the Indigenous people. We were put on reservations. We don't have the same land base to create our own wealth that the rest of Canada gets to take for granted and go ahead and do. And what does the government do? They make us sign these contribution agreements that don't allow us to have the freedom to go and do what we need to do for ourselves. So our capacity is always limited that way. What we need to do is call upon each other to unify, and this is an opportunity for that, so that we can start to pressure the government to give us the resources we need so we can address our own problems. We know how to deal with our problems if we're given the resources to do so. You know, cutting back AMC 80% a few years ago. The Assembly Manitoba Chiefs lost 80% of their capacity to continue their lobbying efforts to help us. That's huge, you know, and we've got incredible people like Derek Nepinak, Grand Chief Nepinak. You know, he's working out of his own pocket, helping our people left, right, and center. You know, just so happens Tanya Nepinak's his relative. He went hunting. Yeah. He literally went hunting to go get meat and food for the feast that's happening on Saturday at the Odena Circle. So, you know, a call out there. We need to get together so that we can bring together resources and help one another. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is one of the actions that's so difficult for people to do, is to find money out of their pockets to go and buy water, money to go buy that extra macaroni, that extra meat to put together a feast to help each other.
Yeah, or even taking the time, and mm-hmm. I think I'm maybe partially culpable in this regard, finding the time to devote to these sorts of important
absolutely
adventures.
You know, and that's
in this busy society.
That's the thing. This society is everything about time, and time what costs money, and what does the government do? Cut back the money, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not solving anything, it's creating even more issues.
I want to bring Sue in back into the conversation. Sue, I mean, we were talking earlier about the amount of support that you're getting or not getting from official authorities. What do you think, what would you and others who have family members of loved ones who've gone through this, what do we in the wider community need to understand? What do we need to do in order to provide comfort, support for those of you who've had this, you've been, you know, these close people close to you just taken mysteriously?
We all need to support each other, the family members that still have a loved one, even our community, cities, I would say the chief should be at these vigils, the walks, the feasts. I don't see our leaders at the vigils. I see Derek Nepinak all the time at the ceremonies, feasts, vigils, walks. He's there. And that's the kind of leader that we need to support our community. And I'm always looking around, where's the other leaders for our women? They're supposed to protect, be there, and help us, you know, but I'm not seeing the support from the other chiefs, the other leaders.
I know I was at the one of the vigils a couple of years ago, or maybe it was last year, probably both years, because it was notable that there were no police present. And if they're trying to make some sort of, you know, extending outward to try to be supportive, you'd think that somebody, there would be some representation.
I've heard two stories about that too. Like, first off, I used to work for a federal government, so one of the big things is you always have to make these requests for information, or you always have to invite people on paper in order for them to come. So if we're not, and a lot of Indigenous people don't know this simple thing, is that if you write a letter and you ask for some authority to come, they're obligated by law that they have to respond whether yes or no they're coming. And so if we're not sending those letters of request to attend and invites to attend, then they don't think they're invited. And that's the way society works in mainstream. And so, you know, for waiting for them to come to us isn't going to happen, because this mainstream works on paper. Yeah. We need to make those physical requests on paper to come and be with us. And I've heard police say that they're trying to be respectful of our space, and that's why they don't attend.
Yes, I mean, and I do know that there are people who can get on edge when they see a policeman, especially if they're in uniform.
Absolutely.
I know that we're talking about the chiefs, and I know that that politicians in Ottawa, in the province, as well as the chiefs, they seem to be pointing to a national inquiry as sort of like the thrust of how we're going to at least begin to resolve this question. What are your thoughts about that focus or apparent preoccupation on a national inquiry?
Well, I probably have, I worked in Ottawa too long. I've seen far too many commissions. I've seen far too many reports, and they just end up on shelves. You know, we've got even the AJ Harper Justice Inquiry. You know, that was done decades ago. How many of those recommendations out of 179, I believe, have ever been implemented? Less than 20, I believe. You know, those kinds of things. And again, it comes back down to resources. They come up with these reports, all these recommendations. Who's responsible for executing them now? And where's the dollars going to come from for executing them now? So I think that's the thrust for those inquiries, is to list those reasons and those needs that we have, so that then public dollars can be released in order for them to go ahead and identify and go and do these things. But we already know what most of that is. Why can't we just move and make that action? You know, I'm working with Bernadette Smith, and they have the Facebook page Drag the Red. So, you know, they're trying to, And the thing, lack of resources again. We had a meeting the other night, and somebody had welded together one of the things that need to drag the river with. And, you know, that costs money. They've got a budget together that they're going to need to do. And again, we're going to be fundraising within our own circles to try and do this. You know, we're having feasts. The feasts is to feed our spirits, to keep us healthy, to keep us going, you know, and that costs money as well too. And a lot of us are on low incomes. It's not easy to extend that extra, even that extra set of food. But and so we rely on one another and support one another as much as possible.
Kona Cochran, Sue Caribou, thank you for being my guests.
Okay, thank you for having us.
Thank you.